Blog Talk Radio.
Kevin Hunter here on the Business Forum Show, and my special guest with me today is John Mackey from Master Credit Solutions. And thanks for joining us here on the Business Forum Show, John.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate being here. I appreciate being able to spread the word.
Well, I'm glad to have you take time out of your day to talk about a matter that's really important to people in our listening audiences, actually all across the United States, because most of us recall the very difficult economic times in the middle, late 2000s, and a lot of people would argue that the economy hasn't recovered even to a great extent even since that time. Subsequently, a lot of people have been hurt when it comes to credit, and getting back on your feet can be a very difficult challenge once you get yourself into trouble. So John Mackey, by the way, has written the book, Debt Collectors, Lies, Damn Lies, and Deceit. It's available on Amazon Kindle. You can also find the book at creditgenie.us. The book is $9.53, well worth your time. Again, the website, Credit Genie, and it's genie.us, and also you can find it on Amazon Kindle. So, John, let's start by having you explain to our listeners here why you decided to write the book.
Well, I've been in credit restoration for quite some time, and prior to that, I was a real estate, owned my own franchise. I did that for 20 years. I was a broker, and within that time period also, I was a loan officer. And the majority of the business that I did as a loan officer and as a realtor were people that had questionable credit.
Gotcha.
And through that process, I found how much lack of knowledge there is on this subject of credit, credit scoring, because credit scoring is a relatively new phenomenon. In other words, when I got in the business back in 1988, there was no credit scoring that affected, let's say, the majority of the buyers out there. And then you had the non-conforming market that didn't care what you had, as long as you could breathe and fog up a mirror, they didn't care you got a loan. Well, now it's a whole lot different. But the reason why I started writing a book about debt collectors and their madness is the fact that nobody out there has written a book that I saw that would actually describe how a debt collector call happens. You know, what happens when they do call you? What can they say? What can't they say? And there are a lot of laws out there that people don't understand. There are statute of limitations that take effect. There are things that occur after you get that initial phone call, what they have to do that 9 times out of 10 they don't. What you can do when you get this letter. What happens when you are picked for a lawsuit? You know, what can you do then? So what my main goal in this is to have people stand up. What I have found is that if you stand up and stop the bullying on their end, it becomes a whole lot easier for you, both financially and psychologically. Because instead of being a passive, now you're being assertive. And there are rights out there that you have, you can assert.
And a fair thing for people to understand, and we visited a little bit about this off air, is that when it comes to debt collectors, there's many of them that are very tenacious about this. Talk a little bit about low-hanging fruit and why that's important for people to stand up and defend themselves in these situations because of the low-hanging fruit phenomena when it comes to a debt collector.
Right. It's kind of like being in a battle in high school or grade school, you know, when you've got the bully and he's bullying and you, he's pushing you. Sometimes if you just walk up to him and knock him on his tush, the fight stops. He's going to go off and find somebody else to pick on. It's the same criteria here. If you stand up, if you push back, their job is to make money. How do they make money? They buy debt. So they buy debt, they try to collect on the debt. If you push back, you're no longer the low-hanging fruit. You've got to stop making yourself but the low-hanging fruit by standing up, by saying, no, you prove it. And I will guarantee you this, that the majority of debt collectors out there, in fact, the CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, has made the comment that the great majority of debt collectors out there do not have the supporting documentation. And if they do not have the supporting documentation, they cannot have it on a credit report, they must supply it to you. And if they don't have it, they can't put it on the credit report and they can't sue you. That's the bottom line. So if you stand up and say, prove it, that's all you got to do. Do you have to talk to them at great length? No, you don't. There's no law that says that you have to talk to them. So, I mean, I'm giving a whole lot of information out here. Would you like me to go through the process of what happens when you get that first call?
Let's do that in just a moment. But before we do, I want you to talk a little bit. You mentioned statute of limitations. I want you to visit about that briefly, because there are plenty of situations where people have the quote-unquote old debt. Talk about statute of limitations and how that affects debt collection.
A statute of limitations is, by its own definition, is defined by statute. What it is that it is a set period of time in which a debt collector or a creditor can come after a debt, and it's in years. Now, some states are 6 years, some states are 15 years, some are five, some are lower as, I believe, three. Now, each state is different, and that's what makes it difficult to talk about in general. Now, the state of Washington, it's 6 years. State of Oregon, it's 6 years. The state where I live in Minnesota, it's 6 years. But there are other states, for example, Texas, you would think that would be long. It's not. It's about 3 years. What this is that it's based on the date of last activity on the debt. So, if you made your last payment December 1st, 2011, they now have until January and then add 6 years to that.
Gotcha.
To collect on that debt. Now, after that time period, can they still collect on it? They can attempt, but they cannot legally sue you at that point anymore. The fact is that no matter who you are, you have an obligation. You always have that debt, but after that statute of limitations expires, they can no longer collect on it legally.
So let's talk a little bit about that process once the calling process starts or they're mailing you things. What's kind of the thought process, or what do you recommend that people do in terms of handling either those calls or those letters coming in?
Typically, the first time you get a phone call, you don't know who it is, and they call and they say, "Hi, is this Bill Smith?" And yes, it is. "Do you know you owe a debt?" Well, now your heart's in your throat and you don't know what to say and it's beating away. You say, "No, you don't," or "I don't understand that," something to that effect. Once that phone call is over, they have statutorily 5 days to get you to what they call a Dunn, D-U-N, or a Dunning. It's the same thing, D-U-N-N-I-N-G, letter. In that letter has to specify who they're collecting on behalf of, how much the money is, and the breakdown of the debt. 90% of the time, a debt collector does not send those out. Do they have to come certified? No, they can come in the regular mail. However, within that is a statutorily mandatory item that says you have a right to appeal this, and you have to appeal it within 30 business days of acceptance or when you received it. So now you say, "Well, how do I know that these people own this debt? I don't know that." What I always recommend is, even if you understand and recognize the debt itself, how do you know that they own it?
Exactly.
There's a lot of history on the theft of debt.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you stories upon stories of that. So you write back a very, very simple letter. And it says in that letter, "I object, and I want you to prove every item that you're trying to collect on," period. Sign your name, send it off to them. They now have 30 days to send you all the documentation. In other words, receipts, contracts, everything related to that file. If they don't, they cannot put it on your credit report, they cannot collect on it, they can't sue you.
And how often does it happen that they fail to respond with the proper documentation?
I've been doing this a long time, and I've seen it maybe 5 or 6 times.
That they've actually responded?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you think the underlying problem is? Are these debt collectors buying debt that are essentially on an Excel spreadsheet or whatever the case is, and they don't actually have any of the documentation of what the actual debt might have been?
Yes, that's a big part of it. The other part of it is that if you're fighting back, you've now removed yourself from being the low-hanging fruit. You've climbed the tree, and now they're going to go off to somebody else that's going to roll over. Because if you don't respond to that debt, then they can put it on your credit report. And now you're going to have to do something about it when it comes time that you want to purchase. And from that point on, too, it could become a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not responding. Okay, they may take a look at your credit report and see that you've got 3 or 4 judgments on there that you've paid off. That's an indication of a low-hanging fruit, because it shows that you're going to be paying back that debt. But my point is this. You don't know who you're paying back. There's been nothing sent to you. It's like when you own a home, and if your debt is sold, or your loan is sold to another company, you get notification of who it's sold to, who your payments are going to be going to, and so forth, from the originating source. In this case, you get nothing. You just get a phone call that says, I'm collecting on behalf of blah, blah, blah. Well, how do you know that you own that debt to them? You don't. You may owe a debt, but it may not be to them.
So just to give a background, as an example, let's say somebody had a Sears credit card at one time. What
right.
generally happens in a situation like that, at some point, Sears writes the debt off on their books, and they
right.
then turn around and sell that debt to a debt collector at 10 cents on a dollar or whatever the amount might be.
You know, 4 cents on the dollar, typically.
Four cents on the dollar. Okay, so I was high with my guess there.
Right.
So 4 cents on a dollar, they sell it to a debt collector. A debt collector then turns around, and that's why you see these situations where when they contact people and they'll say things like, you know, you owe $3,000, but if you pay $1,000 by, you know, the 30th of this month, we'll write off the balance of the debt. They're just hoping you pay something, and they can make a few bucks on their 4 cent per dollar purchase they made.
Correct. To me, I have found that it may be a clear indication that they don't have the documentation for the debt. Because why would they else would they be giving you an incentive to get this thing sold?
That makes a lot of sense. If it's not the original holder of the debt, why would they cut you a deal like that?
Right. Why would they start off with something like that? And I've seen them try to do that with debts that are beyond the statute of limitations. And here's the caveat to the statute of limitations, is that if you know, after 6 years, let's say I have got a debt from back in 1998, and I get a notice saying, you know what, if you just pay me, you know, 10 cents or $10 on this, I'll stop calling. You think, well, you know what, I'm going to shut this guy up. I'll just give him 10 bucks, and then they're going to go away. You know what happens? It re-ages that debt. So now the date of last activity, instead of 1998 or 99, is now today.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got another 6 years to collect.
Yeah, they just made your statute of limitations because it's based on the last activity on the debt.
Correct.
Well, okay. So another subject that I want to talk about, John, because a lot of people misunderstand what FICO is and how FICO is scored. As an example, a gentleman was sharing with me not long ago that he's had a credit card that he has always made timely payments on. In fact, in many cases, he's even paid it off entirely. And he said in the entire time he's had that card, it has not improved his credit score. And yet, with just a little bit of conversation with him, I find out that he maxes out the balance fairly regularly on the card. So I know that to be one of the mistakes. So let's talk about FICO. How FICO is actually scored and help people understand that a little bit better, how somebody actually calculates a credit score for them.
It's a very complicated system. FICO stands for Fair Isaac Corporation, and I want to get even more basic than what you're asking. Experian had their own scoring system, so you would get a score. My point here is that it was based on a 995 scoring model. So the maximum you could get was a 995. But as you can tell, because FICO scoring is based on an 850. In other words, the maximum is 850. If you've got a 750 score on the 995 system, it doesn't equate to a 750 score on the 850. It would be down around into the low sixes.
Sure.
So they would go online and they would see their score and they think they're qualified for a mortgage. A lot of deception there. And the credit bureaus knew what they were doing with that. So now we go down to the FICO score where everybody is showing you a FICO score now. You go onto any credit monitoring service. There's going to be a credit score out there that they're going to give you. However, there are over 100 different scoring models within FICO. In other words, what they're showing you is a generic FICO score. However, if you're buying a home, you've got a FICO score that's weighted for a mortgage. If you're buying a car, they've got a FICO score that's weighted for auto loans, and one for cars or credit cards, one for apartment rentals, one for the insurance industry. And so we can go on and on and on. So I'll give you a real case example. She pulled up her credit report, had a 723 mid score. She thought she could get a loan. went to the loan company, pulled a score, pulled a credit report, and her score was a 682. Well, how could that be? Mm-hmm. It's the same day, same time frame, everything. One is not weighted, one is weighted. And the score that they're going to use at the mortgage company is the one that is weighted. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is you've seen these ads on TV, who's putting it out? No, Credit Karma. They say, what is your credit score? 625, 715, whatever. You don't have a credit score. You've got three.
Mm-hmm.
And a mortgage company is going to use the middle one, not an average. Now, if you only have two scores, then they're going to use the lower of the three. My point here is that it's very misleading to say, I have a credit score. No, you don't. You've got three.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, credit scoring is also, they break it down into five general categories. The first is the most important, and the most important is paying on time and how that can affect somebody. If you have an 800 credit score and you have one 30-day late, you're going to drop 125 points.
That's amazing.
If you have a, let's say, 600 score and you have a 30-day late, most recent, it's going to drop you 25 points. So a derogatory item is going to hit your credit report harder if you've got a higher score. And here's a caveat, if you have a debt collection out there, do not expect to pay that debt collection off and get a higher score. It works just in reverse. If you pay bad debt off, you're going to lower your score. The question is why? Because FICO is focusing on right now. What happens right now is like a snapshot, and it focuses in on right now. And in the periphery, things get blurry. And in the credit scoring industry, things get blurry on the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
When you've brought that bad debt into clear focus now, even though you've paid it off.
Yep. Yeah, that's phenomenal. I've heard that a number of times and have had the question myself as to why when somebody pays a debt off that it would actually worsen the credit score. But that's really interesting that it happens that way. And in a not necessarily a parallel situation, but we've talked about statute of limitations and somebody paying $10
right.
on a debt and all of a sudden bringing it back to being current and now giving the debt collector another 6 years on it.
But now you've already also lowered your score.
Yeah, because it's brought that negative history back up to the current analysis or part of the current analysis or calculation of the credit score.
That is correct. That's exactly right.
That's
now, you had mentioned when we started this about that guy that had...
Maxing out the credit balance.
Maxing it out. Here's what happens. When the bill is sent to you showing you the balance versus the maximum amount you can use, that creates a ratio. That is what's going to be reported to the credit bureaus. So, and I've had many examples where you've got entrepreneurs. They've got a 20,000 credit line, let's say on a MasterCard or Visa or whatever. They max it out every month. They get the bill. They pay it off. Next month, they do the same. They charge it up. They pay it off. What's being reported is a maxed out credit card. That lowers your score.
Mm-hmm.
The key to that one, and it's one of the keys that I use in many of my talks, is that you go on the internet now and you pay it off or pay it down significantly at the 3-week mark, the 21-day mark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bill you get comes with the diminished amount that you currently owe. So now your ratio went down from 100%, let's say down to 25%.
Sure, so knocking it down before the balance actually shows up on the bill is what counts.
Yes.
Okay.
And that'll raise your score a lot.
Excellent. We're almost out of time here, John, but let's visit briefly about rebuilding credit. I know you offer credit rebuilding services for folks. Give a basic overview of what credit rebuilding might look like.
Okay. Credit rebuilding is not that difficult, or credit building for that matter, not that difficult. You have two portions of your credit score that are the big factors. One is installment debt and the other is revolving. Revolving is also based on what I just mentioned regarding the debt ratio or the credit card ratio, how much you've used. But you should have both on your credit score or your credit report for maximum scoring purposes. So how do you start it? Well, credit cards are relatively easy. Even if you've got just a horrible credit, you can establish it with revolving debt. Another way, though, is to use installment debt. Now, installment debt is like a car. Revolving is like a credit card. But let's use a car for an example. An installment debt is a fixed time frame, typically fixed interest rate, and you're paying back the same amount over a short period of time, let's say 4 years. But what happens is that in order to do that, you have to go out and buy a car, right? No, it's not buying a car. What you can do, and what most people don't understand, is that the credit union is an extraordinarily great example of how you can do this. Because what you do, in essence, is you join a credit union, usually it's a $5 fee, you bring to them $340, you borrow back $300, the $40 that's left in the account makes the payment for the $300 that you're borrowing from yourself. The net effect is that you're costing yourself about $14 to build that credit line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the credit union, you could do this two or three or four times on four different loans. So now you're reestablishing your credit quickly.
Mm-hmm.
People in bankruptcy can do it. Let's say you're out going to buy a home. And after a bankruptcy, you need 2-3 years on an FHA loan, for example, beyond that bankruptcy date.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that people don't reestablish credit during that time. No one's offering them anything or whatever it is, just a horrible thing, horrible rate, you know. Or they go off and they buy this junker of a car because these are the people that want 30% interest rate. And so you pay that. Reestablish your credit through the credit unions. You know all about cars.
Yes.
You understand that process.
I've seen situations, John, where somebody's gone in and bought a $3,000 car, and because of the interest rates and the fees and the way they have the, you know, like a buy here, pay here lot, like is a classic example, but I've seen a situation where a $3,000 vehicle was paid for, you know, 3 to 4 times by the time they paid it off based off all the fees and interest.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And if you want the old school method of debt collection, there they are. You know,
yes.
They come out and visit you at the house and break your kneecaps. I'm being facetious. Maybe I'm not. I don't know.
You're not far off.
You get the idea.
Yeah.
You get the idea. So this is a quick, simple, very easy way to do it. Legitimate, legal. They're in business to help the small consumer. The credit unions are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty to them.
Well, it's been awesome having you here on with us, John. For those in our listening audience, John Mackey from Master Credit Solutions, you can find him on the web at iceaway.com, and that's exactly the way it's spelled, I and then S-E-E, away.com. So iceaway.com, and the contact number, 888-417-3400, again, 888-417-3400. If you would like to text a question or comment to John, you can do so at 612-460-5931. Again, that text line only is 612-460-5931. And again, the book that's available that John Mackey just recently wrote, Debt Collectors, Lies, Damn Lies, and Deceit, a great book that's available on Amazon Kindle for $9.53. You can also find it on the website creditgenie.us. Again, Kevin Hunter here on the Business Forum Show. Thanks for joining us.